Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hi, I'm Peter Hill, and this is the D-Word podcast, where we talk dementia. Thanks for joining me. The portrayal of dementia in the media has been a particular interest of mine, so I'm delighted that this week my guest is freelance journalist Anthea Rowan. So when did Anthea's interest in the subject start?
I live in Tanzania, and I've been working as a journalist for a long time. I used to write a lot on mental illness. I still do, but that was born, in fact, my whole writing career was born of trying to understand my mum's depression. She suffered with very bad depressions, which began in her 30s. So we were quite young when they started. So to try and sort of untangle them in my head, I started to write and started to reach out to doctors and researchers to try and understand mum's illness. So then when she developed dementia, and I'm not sure why she has developed dementia, there have been lots of sort of theories abound about why it might be her parents never suffered. They lived well into their 80s. Might be after she had a stroke. But in any event, I then found that I started to write about her dementia. And I think, oddly, writing about her depression was probably a result of trying to avoid the same. And unconsciously, I'm doing the same with writing about dementia. I write about it. I talk to researchers and doctors and keep up with the developments in treatments and tests and what we understand about it, and find myself sort of implementing some of those things, you know, walking harder, faster, being more mindful of my diet, all those kinds of things. So the D word now has always been kind of a D word. Depression has morphed into dementia. So that's where we are. She lives with me now. She's lived with us for a year. That's where we are.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting area, isn't it, in terms of getting involved with a subject like dementia, which still in kind of many cases is pretty much misunderstood. It's kind of, you know, it's sort of almost a natural consequence of aging by some people still, isn't it?
Absolutely. I had this conversation with a friend the other day, and she said that's it exactly. It's considered an inevitable part of aging. I think we all used to sort of talk about it in very sort of glib tones, sort of like senile dementia. Oh, I must be getting senile dementia, senior moments, all this kind of thing. And although it's not, from what I understand, although it's not entirely avoidable, there's a great deal that we can do to avoid it or to delay it. I had a very interesting conversation with a doctor at Cambridge the other day, interviewing him for a piece, and he said, what's interesting is he said that the adults that sort of try to build up their cognitive reserve and stay engaged and connected and all these good things, they may present with the pathology of dementia but bear none of the symptoms, which I found fascinating. It was like they'd sort of created this rainy day bank for later, which was serving them well. I was fascinated by that.
Yeah, and I think it's a kind of area. We've had a bit of a campaign, I suppose, going on the show that I come from a public health background and I was used to talking about diabetes and heart disease, etc. Rarely did I hear the words dementia when I was working in public health. And it's just about that kind of thing of it being a little bit kind of left field, I guess, as a subject in terms of brain health. We all know what to do with cardiac health. We've seen adverts on the TV from here in the UK from the British Heart Foundation, but now that I can't find many people that actually talk about brain health.
No, you're right. I think it's beginning to happen now, Pete, but I think you're absolutely right. And again, I asked someone, I said, is it because we are more aware of it now? Is it because there are more people that live with it now? Is it because we're better at talking about it now? You know, once this was the case for mental illness, and now we're much more open about mental illness. We talk about mental illness in the family. You know, there's so many public health campaigns about mental illness in all its forms. But I think that hasn't quite happened with dementia. Although there are many people that live with dementia, millions of people that live with dementia, I think it's one of those things that people don't talk about yet. I'm not sure why. My default is always, if you talk about it, it's less frightening. If I talk about it and sort of bring it out and into the harsh light of day and scrutinize it, it seems a bit less frightening to live with it. Because the number of people that have come forward since I've been writing about it and dropped in on Instagram or mailed me or whatever and talked about a parent or a spouse, there are hundreds of people out there. I don't know whether people are embarrassed to talk about it. I don't know if people are ashamed of it. I'm not sure why we're not talking about it as much as we should be yet.
Yeah, I think there's a kind of general lack of understanding. I mean, I've got plenty of friends who are living with dementia and live well, as well as they can with the condition. In fact, I spoke to a guy called Harry Urban from Pennsylvania last week, and he was diagnosed 20 years ago. And Harry is still doing his woodworking and things that he wanted to do. So I sometimes feel that those stories are not portrayed in the kind of mainstream media.
I agree with you. And I think it is because we just sideline it as it's like a dementia, that's a diagnosis. And so that's the end of that kind of thing. I spoke to last week, I interviewed for a piece I'm working on the founders of the so-called dementia villages, the first one being in the Netherlands. Interestingly, the lady I interviewed said she hates that phrase, dementia village. It was born of a program that CNN did on them. And she said it's sort of stuck. So she said, we must, although we slightly resist it, we must go with it. And she said exactly that the problem is that when, because dementia has become so sort of, it's viewed in terms of medicine as opposed to terms of trying to accommodate the illness within the sort of parameters of a normal life. So she was, their vision is very much about sustaining normal life for as long as possible. And remembering that even if my mother had a conversation with a friend, you know, if a friend of mine dropped round and mum had a conversation with her, a lot of what mum said might not really bear out. You know, it would be very muddled and very convoluted and the stories would change, which would leave my friend perhaps feeling confused. But if mum had a conversation with a fellow dementia sufferer, it would just be a conversation. You know, the fact that their cognition might not always be keeping up doesn't mean that they're not enjoying the opportunity to connect. And I think that's what is missed out when people are immediately sort of put into this, when it's viewed in medicine as opposed to sort of a social care parameter.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, my view is there's nothing like sitting around the table having a cuppa and a chat. And you may kind of feel that's kind of facile, but actually for someone living with dementia, that is a really good purpose. It's a really good thing, and good things come out of it. Friendships come out of it.
I completely agree, Pete. And I think also that a person's confidence is so easily damaged if you place limitations upon them. I was worried about my mum taking walks in the garden on her own. And so I encouraged her not to wait for me if she wanted to have a walk. And after I'd spoken to this this woman who in the Netherlands who said that you know in the conventional nursing homes and frail care facilities and old age homes and that the residents are not encouraged to go for walks on their own. She said that she believed that it was a consequence of our sort of litigious society where everybody wants to sue everybody else if somebody has a fall. And she said, you know, for an elderly person to have a fall, you know, maybe that's part of life. You know, maybe that's just going to happen. You know, so long as they're in a safe space, they're not going to get hit by a car, or you manage stairs and they have a stick or a walking aid. And then they can walk at their own pace and not feel like they're being taken for a walk. So I started to do that with mum. I sort of, you know, make sure that she gets into the garden safely. She has her stick. If she falls, she'll fall on the lawn, probably quite gently. And I've noticed it's a real lift in her mood and a real sort of confidence. I'm going for my walk now. She doesn't need to be, you know, wait for somebody to fit her into their busy day. So, yeah, I'm with you. And I don't think it's facile at all. I think that it's very important to have conversations with people who are suffering with dementia, because even if they don't follow, and even if we don't follow them, they're still engaging. And that's really important. And I'm sure that all of that helps just to keep things going. Otherwise, they're just disconnected, aren't they? They're more and more disconnected.
Yeah, I think, you know, people see the condition rather than the person.
Completely.
Which I always find sad. I mean, the genesis of the D word is when I was working with the Alzheimer's Society, we were managing activity groups for people living with dementia in the community. And the carers used to bring the loved one in. And I used to say to him, you know, the one word we don't mention when we go into the hall there with all the people. And they said, what? And I said, dementia. Because I said, what is the point of me saying that's Alice with dementia or Dennis with dementia? This is Alice and Dennis.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
I think absolutely. It's my friends living with dementia, one of them always says to me, please ask me what I can do, not what I can't.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. And please let me do what I can do. The things that my mum can do are quite limited now, and she takes a long time to do them. But I do let her do them, you know, whether it's getting dressed and trying not to leap in to help with a button or help with a lace, but to sort of bite my tongue and be patient and let her do it herself. Because I think that otherwise, I think that it's hugely disabling. You're enabling the dementia, and you're not enabling the person at all if you keep leaping in. So I have had to learn that. I've had to learn a lot by living with her and sort of sitting back at times and also slowing down when I'm with her not minding when the conversation goes round and round or the same question is asked many, many times. Her illness is quite advanced. She doesn't know who I am. I don't know where she thinks her children are. She knows that she has children, but she doesn't understand that I'm one of them.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I think, talking to people, one of the most important things is, in terms of a caregiver, is actually learning to communicate, because it's almost like starting from the beginning again. You've got to learn a kind of new language and a new way of speaking. And when you do that, it can be, you know, really valuable.
Yes, I agree with you, Pete. One thing that I'm trying to learn to do, it's quite, what I find hard is that our history has gone. So there's very few things that we have in common that I can talk about where she might feel confident in contributing to the conversation. So if I speak about my siblings, that's That doesn't always work because she doesn't remember who they are. If I speak about my children, her grandchildren, she doesn't know who they are. Even if I speak about my father, who died when we were teenagers, she doesn't remember my father. So she remembers her parents, who she speaks about a lot. So we speak about them. And we speak about sort of the here and the now, you know, what's happening in the garden, or what her lunch is like, or what she might be trying to read, or what the view is like, or keeping conversations very, you know, very sort of close to us, because beyond that, most of it has gone. I'm aware that when I do talk to her about it, if I flag those things, it obviously makes her anxious because she doesn't remember them, doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Do you feel that the role of carers, caregivers, as they're called in the US, is one, underestimated, and two, I see it rarely mentioned, you know, the real nitty gritty of what people have to go through in terms of supporting someone living with dementia?
Yeah, I agree with you, Peter. I think about it in different ways. I think one is people speak about a caregiver. It's like, you know, that's inevitable. You know, you've got to care for her. And I do, indeed, I do have to care for her. Some people say to me, oh, I could never do what you're doing. But what if you didn't have a choice? You know, what if there was nowhere better for your mum to be? You know, I looked at those dementia villages and I thought that looked like a really wonderful environment for someone like mum, who doesn't remember her children or her grandchildren. And she could be within a community of people at the same age and stage in her life. But we can't afford something like that. So this is the next best thing, to live with me because I work at home. But I think it is either sort of overlooked, as in, oh, how hard can it be? You know, how hard can it be? Yeah, it can be really hard. It's not just the physical demands, it's the emotional demands, and it's the loss of everything that's gone before. And so, to all intents and purposes, I'm a stranger or some benevolent friend. On the good day, the good days are gentle and we sort of potter along quite happily. But the difficult days are very, very difficult. You know, with a lot of rage and she can be very, hurtful. She can say very hurtful things. And you have to learn to let that go. But it's much harder than you know, people say, oh, well, you learn to let it go. It's much harder to do that than you think, until you're actually at the receiving end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, a lot of carers that I know looked at what happened with COVID and almost turned around and said, well, some people have got an idea now what I go through. Because, you know, they couldn't go out and all the constrictions that were put on. And they seem to, you know, and I quite agree with them, you know. I mean, for everybody that went through COVID, it must have been doubly hard to be a carer going through it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I think that COVID, you know, made things much worse, I think, for people that were sort of borderline. I think that my mum's dementia probably went sort of slightly undiagnosed. And of course, that sort of mandatory isolation that was placed on people when their world shrunk even more, I think probably hastened her illness somewhat. She was living with my brother at the time because he was working from home. And it was after that that we decided that the best place would be with me, because he had to go back to an office and I'm at home. But I certainly think that must have been the case for lots of people living with sufferers of dementia, that their loved ones sort of withdrew further because they couldn't do anything. They couldn't go to the shops, you know, because their age prohibited them. They couldn't go to the shops. They couldn't do any of the things they normally did.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like having your world turned upside down twice. first with a diagnosis. And then suddenly you've got people saying, put this mask on, wash your hands. You're not aware why you're doing all this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Very confusing.
One thing I wanted to talk about, I mean, we said earlier about it being seen as a natural form of aging. It's, you know, it's going to happen. You're going to get dementia or whatever. But I do feel that the 48,000 people here in the UK that are living with young onset dementia get a really poor deal because they're rarely mentioned.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. And I'm not sure why that is, Pete, because in the large scheme of things, it's a smaller number of dementia sufferers. I don't know, because that must be devastating. You know, that obviously is devastating. You know, they're still alive to be lived, and they're diagnosed in their late 40s or 50s. Very little is spoken about. Oddly enough, I did speak to a young girl the other day, very young girl whose father was diagnosed with early onset dementia, and she does lots of campaigning. And I asked her if she would ever want to know if this illness was in her future. And she said that the type of dementia that her father had was not a heritable condition. But she also said that no, she wouldn't want to know, because she said surely that, you know, there's nothing that can be done at the moment. So the only thing to do is to live as well as you can to avoid it. So that if there is ever a diagnosis, if you're ever unlucky enough to receive that diagnosis, you know that you've done what you can. That sounds a bit simplistic, but I do hear her. I hear her because they're, you know, even the doctor that I interviewed about it, he said, what would be the point really in telling someone until we can offer a treatment, a fail-safe treatment? Sure, you can get them onto trials and you know, monitor and onto research programs and that, but you can't say we can fix you.
Yeah, I think it, you know, looking at the media in this country, and the major headlines are mainly all around trying to find a magic bullet, trying to find the cure. But sometimes they kind of misjudge the issue a little bit. I mean, there was a famous one in this country when I was working with the Alzheimer's Society that said strawberries can cut your dementia risk. Headline paper, and one of my friends who was in my group said, "Oh, I'm going to tell my wife to go out and buy my strawberries." And I said, "Well, actually, how it's not quite like that. It doesn't work that way, you know." And I think sometimes there's a misunderstanding over that kind of go for the sensational headline.
Completely, and that does. I think that does a lot of harm, because I think first of all that diminishes the enormity of a dementia diagnosis. I think it makes people think it's too easy to cut your risk. It's not easy to cut your risk. I think there are sort of 12 modifiable risk factors, aren't there? And so you would have to be looking at all of them to be doing your very best to avoid the illness, and you still may not avoid it. But I agree with you, that sort of clickbait headlines, which you know, whether it's blueberries or walnuts or never eating a slice of bacon or whatever it might be, that's not helpful. You know, this is a big serious illness, and it needs big serious headlines that are going to alert people to the ways to avoid it. But also, you know, we could also do with some sort of helpful headlines about the number of trials that are ongoing, about the very positive research that's been done on people that are living with dementia and living quite well with dementia, you know, because they're managing to maintain an independence and a life and a social life and connections with people. I think that's worthy of, you know, that's worthy of a story. I read a story this morning. It wasn't a story. I mean, it was something on PubMed or something. It was a research paper about people again in Holland who are working with elderly people with a dementia diagnosis, and how, you know, increasing their walking or increasing their strength is improving their cognition, you know, in sort of right there and then. You know, it's making a difference to their cognition and how they're able to focus at that point in time. You know, these are important things. These are good stories. And I think that then if people heard those stories more, if people heard stories like that more, they would understand that this is a community of people that mustn't just be sidelined, that, you know, sort of that they can't be, that they're diagnosis mustn't shroud the personality. That's what happens. You know, they're completely lost to the dementia is all people see. And like you say, you know, if you've met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia, and that's completely true. They're all individuals. They, you know, it's not, you know, every person that suffers with any other illness is still, they are still that person. They might have lost their stories, they might have lost their cognitions, they might have lost their connections, all sorts of things, but they still have a story, and it's up to us to remember that and to try to support them with that story.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we lose the value of people's memories in terms of social history and things that we can learn. You know, in working with people living with dementia, I've learned a heck of a lot. You know, yes. They've taught me how to play dominoes. They've taught me this. They've taught me that. And we had one guy that one of our volunteers found out he was evacuated during World War II to a small village in Wales. So he got it up on Google. And there was, you know, Terry was the guy who was looking at it and thinking, oh, yeah, well, the post office used to be over there. And that was, you know, and that I just stood there and I was amazed. It was absolutely brilliant.
How incredible. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, it was, you know, The other thing I kind of want to talk to you about is in terms of social media, there's a big dementia community there. But I feel at the moment in social media terms, it's in a bit of a bubble because I talk to people, as you know, all over the world. And it's amazing the connections because, you know, do you know so-and-so? Oh, yeah, I know so-and-so. And oh, I've seen their Twitter feed or whatever. I mean,
I think there's a very big. I follow a lot of people in the sort of that sort of dementia community on Instagram, and they're very active with hundreds, thousands, a million followers. And I'm really delighted to see them there. But I agree. I'm staggered that they haven't sort of that is not a wider net, that we're not seeing more of that outside of social media. And I don't know why that is. I really don't know why that is. I don't know. But that's really struck me that if I want to talk to somebody about dementia, that Instagram is sort of a go-to. You'll always find somebody there, and every single person that I've ever approached on Instagram, on dementia, you know, even those that have thousands of followers are always incredibly generous with their time. You know, they're giving a lot to a community. You know, lots of people that, you know, lots of sort of very famous health writers or whatever that I approach or authors that I approach, I quite often don't get a response for an interview. But I have yet to not hear back from somebody that I approached on dementia. So they're obviously all very energetic about this, you know, getting the right messages out and sharing their knowledge, you know, sharing their knowledge as carers or sharing their knowledge on what they've read or what they've listened to or whatever it might be. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think it's a message of hope as well, that a lot of the positive messages that you get out kind of reduce a little bit, as we were saying earlier, this stigma of, well, I've got, as Harry said to me last week, actually, I said to him, what was it like when you got your diagnosis? And he said, well, I thought I was going to die. And when you think, you know, yes, it is an incurable disease. But as he went on, he thought, well, actually, I'm going to have to learn to live with this. And he did, and has successfully done so.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's exactly it, isn't it? If you, and the other thing that frustrates me is when when I mention to people that my mum has dementia, the assumption is it's just about forgetting. Oh,
yeah.
You know, how awful that she's lost her memories. And it's such a big disease that affects so many parts of her. You know, it affects her. It affects her. You know, all of her. It's not just her memories, but her connections are gone, and her the hallucinations that she lives with, and all the other things that can come along with as the disease advances. So my mum is incontinent, she's developed that quite shuffling walk now. There are so many parts that come in, and they can come in at different times for a person or not at all. And that's it. It's such a big and varied disease.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I've got a friend in Ireland with Lewy body dementia, whose short-term memory is very good. And, you know, he does radio interviews and whatever. And first thing I say to him, what's it like you losing your memories? And he said, well, actually, I haven't. You know, I get loads of other symptoms, night terrors and physical symptoms and whatever. The short-term memory actually is still intact.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So that's it. It just gets umbrellaed under that one dementia without people knowing that there are many types. And different prognoses for different types and different people.
Well, I think that's very important when it comes to caring and certainly in residential care facilities, that people realise that. Because, you know, a lot of people, I think they probably ask you the question, they say to me, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? And I have to say to them that dementia is the umbrella term, and underneath it,
umbrella and Alzheimer's comes under it. Yes,
all sorts of conditions. But the general thought seems to be, well, you know, dementia. Oh, the guy Alzheimer's dementia. Well, what's the difference between those two? So yeah, I think it's a long way to go, but I think we are generally in the kind of nearly 3 years now that I've been doing the show. We are getting there. It's a slow process. But there are so many amazing, inspirational people out there. I just hope they get the publicity and the focus that they deserve.
Yes, I do too, because I think that it will be, if people keep, well, you know, when I think about what I do, and I'll read a research paper, and that research paper, you know, maybe there would have been a small number of people involved in the study, or maybe it would have been a very large and lengthy study. But I think if we keep this noise out here, this noise in the media of campaigners, you know, on the radio, wherever it is, it keeps the pressure on for research and understanding that it's not just the subjects that they will study, but there's a whole community out here that needs to be heard, and so they remain galvanized in trying to find, you know, cures and in the meantime to find ways to support people living with dementia, and understanding things like, for example, just the different approaches to dementia, you know, dementia care facilities, so that it doesn't have to be sort of this sort of medicalized route of being shut in a bedroom, but it can be within a community of like-minded. I feel like that's a step forward from where we were. You know, where were we to start with? It was part of sort of like psychiatric units and then hospitals and then frail care and nursing care. And now maybe people can be within their own communities if they can't remain at home in their home community. I feel like that is in a step in the right direction, but it needs this noise from the outside to keep it going in labs and within the medical arena.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully you and I can, you know, provide a bit of that along with other friends that podcast and do various other things. Time has sadly brought us to a close, but thank you so much, Anthea. It's been
not
delightful talking to you.
And, not at all, Pete.
You know, all I can say is, as we say to a lot of my guests on the show, please keep on doing what you're doing. Many thanks to Anthea, and you can find out more on her website at www.anthearoan.com. Well, that's it for this edition. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me again on the next episode of the D Word Podcast.